Hello, this is Brad McIntyre, and you are listening to the Cultivated Playwright Podcast, Episode 2. In this episode, I'd like to take a little bit of time to remember Sir Peter Hall, the English director who passed on just last week at the time this podcast is coming out. He passed on September 12th in the early hours, Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. He had been struggling with dementia for several years before his death, and it's not a smooth way to go. And my thoughts go out to his family and those close to him. I didn't know a great deal about Peter Hall until, well, fairly recently when I was kind of poring over the different obituaries and profiles and tributes to him and just how many pies he had fingers in while he was kind of living his very busy career. I did know a couple of basic facts about him. Years ago, I read a biography called Power Plays, and it was about Peter Hall, and I remembered some things. For instance, he's very well known as being the founder of the Royal Shakespeare Company and helping it get its footing both in Stratford-upon-Avon, Shakespeare's hometown there in England, as well as putting together a London headquarters for it as well. And overlapping with that, he was also the director of the National Theatre. He took over the National Theatre directorship, I want to say, in the early 1970s, 1972, 1973. It was the time period when the National Theatre moved from the Old Vic Theatre to the concrete kind of superstructure that it occupies today on the South Bank. The theater that where it is now is a really wonderful arts center, in my opinion. I know it caused some controversy in England, there in London, when it first was built. And Sir Peter Hall was right in the middle of that transition. He took over for Sir Laurence Olivier, who had been the director of the National Theater up to that point. And it was not a smooth transition. And the whole endeavor, from what I remember reading about it, was in financial precariousness for a long time, and Peter Hall kind of shepherded it through those early years after it transferred from the Old Vic and then grew to the three-stage complex that it has now. Yeah, I actually lived in London for a while in the late 90s, and it was one of my favorite places to go. There's like a little bookstore at the front, and there's coffee shops and bookstalls and things all along the outside of it, there along the river. And it's really beautiful at night. And the theaters themselves are really decked out places. Like, they're really nice theaters on the inside, the spaces are. I know it caused some controversy, but I personally was a big fan of where the National Theater is, that whole venue. Anyway, yeah, so I knew this about Peter Hall. I also knew he was a director of lots of stage productions. He really specialized in Shakespeare plays. He had a very definite way he liked Shakespeare to be performed. A little bit antiquated nowadays, his thoughts on how to perform Shakespeare, but he was very outspoken and he's very clear in how he thought it should be done. And I also remember like little trivia facts about him as well. They kind of add to the overall legacy of the man. I know that he was very flirty. He liked beautiful young women. And even when he got older and balder and a little more heavy set, he seemed to still have a thing for the young ladies. This could be the reason I think he was married four different times. I don't remember all of his wives, but I do remember at one time, he was married to Leslie Caron, the French dancer and actress, who I know from the movie An American in Paris from 1951. She played opposite Gene Kelly. It was one of my favorite all-time movies. And I might be mistaken, but I think that's one of her first movie roles. She married Peter Hall, I want to say later in the 1950s, 56, 57. I can't remember exactly. I read the book years ago. It had to be 15 years ago. And it was at a moment when I was trying to learn as much as I could about well-known directors around the world. And I read books on Peter Hall and Richard Foreman and André Serban and Robert Lepage and Robert Wilson. And then, of course, I gather together all the materials I can find on Peter Brook just as a point of rule in my life, because Peter Brook is one of my mentors. I've never met him in person, but he's had a huge influence on me. In fact, Peter Brook was a good friend and colleague of Peter Hall, and they were actually kind of polar opposites. Peter Brook is very kind of quiet and down to earth, and he's kind of Yoda-like in the theater, although he himself would not consider himself a guru in any way or a leader in the influential sense, but his kind of theater is very, Peter Brook I'm talking about, his kind of theater is very pared down and essential, I guess would be the word you would put with it. It's very precise, and it's very only what is needed on stage. So the set pieces and the acting and the storytelling is all cut down to the barest essential that is needed. I always think of Peter Brook as his kind of theater is the equivalent of the way Ernest Hemingway writes novels. I bring this up because Peter Hall, his friend who I'm talking about today, is pretty much the polar opposite. Peter Hall was kind of a impresario character. He was a very modern director in that he kind of leaned into his celebrity. He liked to hobnob and mingle with the social circles there in London. He caused a little bit of controversy, and he did not mind causing controversy when he took over as the director of the National Theatre, because, of course, he gave himself an income that allowed him to kind of be part of the jet set. Throughout the 70s and 80s, he took Concords all over the world, and back in London, he would kind of live right at the edge of his means, drove around in a Rolls Royce. He kind of liked being, at the center of things, like a pseudo-celebrity sort of director for the theater, which, yeah, that's why I say he's kind of the polar opposite of Peter Brook. Peter Brook would very happily just make theater and like for his audience to see it, and would remove himself from the whole kind of process if he possibly could, as far as the outside world goes. Anyway, I want to take a moment in the podcast today to kind of pay tribute to Sir Peter Hall. In the late 90s, as I said, when I was living in London, I actually did see one of his productions. He did a production at the Old Vic, actually, of Samuel Beckett's play Waiting for Godot. And I remember seeing this performed. I was there as a student. I was studying abroad, and I got in for like a student discount rate, and it was fantastic. I saw Ben Kingsley play, I think he was playing Estragon. He was playing Gogo, and he was playing opposite the great Alan Howard, who I didn't know very well at the time, and I think he was playing Vladimir. This production was just devastating. It was very, very straightforward, very by the book. I had seen Waiting for Godot previously in another production back in Texas, and I had read the play, of course, when I was in high school. But it wasn't until seeing Peter Hall's production that he had directed that the just existential terror of the piece came across. I mean, it was still funny. It had funny parts in it, but it just left this profound sadness at the end of the play, just at how these people were stuck on this lonesome road by this tree. Just full impact kind of production. I believe he was doing it at the time he had his own company after he left the National Theater and after he left the Royal Shakespeare Company. He started his own, I believe, I want to say it was a for-profit company, not a non-profit sort of situation. Maybe he had been burned by the non-profit sector in England. After all, the National Theatre is a public theatre. It's paid for by taxpayer dollars. So by rolling around in a Rolls Royce and living high on the hog, maybe it was too much fodder for his enemies and the criticisms that he got in the press for doing all this on the taxpayer's dime. So he started a commercial company called the Peter Hall Company. And he did that for a long time. I believe that he moved from London to Bath, England, towards the end of his run. But this is a production that I saw in London while I was living there. This production of Waiting for Godot. And boy, it just drove home how strong the writing of Samuel Beckett is at some points. Particularly this play, his most accessible play, Waiting for Godot. It should be pointed out that Peter Hall was the first to do the play in the UK 40-some-odd years earlier. He was the first director to take on the play in England, and it was when it was first presented outside of Paris, where the play premiered, where Waiting for Godot premiered. So Peter Hall was returning to the material, and I want to say he directed it again in the early 2000s. I want to say, I'm speaking into this podcast extemporaneously, and I'm trying to remember all these facts. I've looked over a lot of like obituaries and features about him in the last couple of days. It was kind of ringing a bell, and then I started recording this podcast and wish I had printed out some of those profiles and obituaries, and I had them in front of me now. But if I'm wrong on some of the dates afterwards when I'm editing this, I'll go back and maybe put an addendum at the end of this if I'm too far off. Or, hey, you could go and find out about Peter Hall on your own. It is worth looking up. It is worth finding out more about him. But a very, very legendary director, legendary leader of organizations in England. And in this podcast, I wanted to look back and say to Sir Peter Hall, goodbye, sir. You will be missed.